You're listening to Confessing Animals with Jen Harris and Vanessa Arrico, rebel poets, real rebels, really talking poets, rebelling and listening.
Okay, don't interrupt me.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Confessing Animals podcast. I'm Jen Harris.
And I'm Vanessa Arrico.
And today we are talking to Heather C. Mole, not to be confused with the other Heather Mole author. Heather C. Mole, she, her, lives on the edge of the windswept Canadian plains. She spends her days searching for her muse, who visits most often and inconveniently when she is cleaning toilets or walking her big fluffy dog and parceling words into poems. Her poems center around themes of grief, trauma, the childhood she spent on a dairy farm, and paying attention to ordinary magic. She's a college dropout with a thirst for information, a nature lover, wife, mom to two teenagers, and continual work in progress. You can check her out on Instagram at Heather C. Mole, M-O-L-L, writer, storyteller, poet, work in progress. This was a really intense and magical interview. I'm really surprised by... Heather brought a perspective to it that we have not yet talked about, which I'm continuously surprised happens. I don't know why, but we're not repeating ourselves at this point. We're getting some real magic out of this revenge redemption theme. How did you feel about our interview with Heather?
Well, I'm sad that we had to stop it. There was just so much more I just could have kept going. Like, I don't know. I think I have a big crush on Heather. We are constantly like sending messages to each other, and it's just like, I'm insatiable. Like, I just want to know more. And now after this conversation, like, I'm even more floored by the imagery of the strong women in her life, from the farms that she grew up in, from the slaughtering of chickens to birthing lambs to this very pastoral beauty, but also a lot of pain mixed into it. And it's just like, I'm endlessly fascinated about the things we learn about our writer and friends. Like, this is just incredible.
Right. And the whole conversation, I think, that we've all always had about like what makes an artist, what is deemed art, you know, it's, this conversation brings that up again, because we are saying that art is what you make it, and creativity is accessible to everybody. And you're a writer, if you call yourself a writer, if you're someone who participates in and is compelled by the act of writing. And Heather has such vivid imagery in her writing, based on, you know, how she was raised and where she's grown up. I mean, it sounds like she lives in a really beautiful place, but it also sounds like, you know, any other small town that we've ever discussed with the slightest amount of disdain, with all of its, you know, many inner workings and secrets and challenges. Like, she's just a very real, raw, authentic guest. And I love what she brought to the table.
Well, that's important for her too. Like, she talks about like finding her honest voice and discovering herself through the writing process. Like, I mean, I think we're all kind of doing that, but like the intentionality that she has set, like, going forward, this is what I'm doing. And I mean, she is doing it. I mean, the amount of work that she's done in a short period of time has been astonishing. And I can't wait to see like where this all goes. Like, you know,
I know she's gonna, I feel like she's gonna be back on here in a couple of years. Let's leave some leeway. Right. But like, she's going to be back on here with an extraordinary piece of work that I know she's going to be proud of. And I look forward to seeing that. And I love catching people at the beginning of a big upswing. So I'm excited to share this interview with you guys today.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah.
You ready?
Let's do it.
All right. All right. All right.
All right. Yeah.
we do what we can to be good kids. We know we're not the best children that people could ask for, but we mean well, and that's what's important. welcome to the Confessing Animals podcast, Heather. We are so happy that you're here today.
I am so happy to be here. I'm very nervous.
That's okay. I'm nervous too, mainly about getting here on time, which is catastrophic because it happens in my office, you know. I'm really happy that you've decided to join us. You're one of our newer members in the Writing Workshop KC, and I love being able to pick from people who've been there for a while, people who've come in and really dived in, committed to the experience. You're part of the community. You're very actively involved now. And I mean, I'd really love to start with kind of what brought you to WWKC.
Yeah, so I did Ash's mentorship in May. And I mean, I followed her since she was, I think around when they adopted Zion, actually, like as a photographer. So yeah, it's been a long time that I've followed her. And then when she started writing, I was super excited. And so I just got the email and was like, I totally want to do this. And writing is relatively new for me, so I was looking for opportunities, especially during the pandemic, to dive into something for myself. And so, yeah, I took that. And then Jen Stark was in the mentorship, and Nicole Boggs as well, and one other person who's not in writing group. And I was just asking them, like, do you guys have a group? Like, I need some people who are writers. And yeah, so Jen told me about it. And so I came before the mentorship was over, and then the next week Ash was like telling us all about WWKC, and I was like, oh yeah, I already went. Yeah. And I think I've only missed 1 week since then in May, actually.
I love the commitment to it. Also, yeah, shout out to Ashley Parsons for building at least a third, if not half, of the WWKC community. But also, I love this network of photographers who are also writers, because that's Ashley, that's you, that's Jen Stark, who's such a phenomenal writer and wonderful addition and human being in our group. I love having you all here. I'm so curious about, like, how do photographers lean into writing, you know, like this. I feel like, I think if you make any art, you can make all art. I'd love to believe that to be true. Like, artists dabble in a lot of things. But were you a photographer for a long time with an interest in writing? Are you a writer moonlighting as a photographer? Like, what is your path look like?
Yeah, so I started taking photos. My husband was into photography when we got together. And so I kind of started taking photos. I was really into scrapbooking for quite a few years. And I always wanted to be a writer, but I had a teacher in grade 7 tell me, you'll never amount to anything. And she was my English teacher. And so that killed writing for me 100%. And I mean, I tried to.
What was the impetus of her telling you that? Was it like, oh, you didn't like write the English paper properly or something? Because that's so harsh. And I keep hearing people share these stories of how these teachers have told them very similar things. And it astonishes me.
I think she was a really wounded person, actually. And I think she was going at the time, probably through a divorce and some really hard stuff family-wise. And I mean, we were grade 7 passing notes, like being idiots, right? Like, I just wanted attention from my friends and stuff. So I think it probably was under a circumstance of like, if you don't apply yourself here, you're never going to amount to anything.
But so she was an adult going through some adult shit, and she took it out on a kid, right? Like, let's be clear, because these scars, as much as you can rationalize, empathize, humanize that person in retrospect, like, also a little bit of fuck that lady, because that's a cruel thing to say to a child.
But like, I'm glad you brought that up, because this is something that's going around right now. And I'm loving that people are like reclaiming that, like being told, you know, you're painting shit, you're writing shit, like you're never going to be anything. It's like, you know, teachers are humans too. And like you said, she was probably going through something. Maybe that's how she felt about herself. Maybe all of her regrets, you know, get placed on these students that you spend so much time with. But again, like, schooling can be so damaging, you know what I mean? And it's just like, I'm so glad that it seems like that voice and that critique has now, you know, you're past that, and now you're you know, trying these new things. You said, you know, maybe during pandemic you wanted to try something new and you found this writing group, right? So like getting back on track, like were you writing before you started the group or did it really jump off with the group?
No, I started probably about 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. I literally was cleaning the toilets one day and this poem popped into my head and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to write this down. And so I did. And then, slowly started allowing myself to just sit and collect those thoughts and put them down on paper. Well, basically on the computer, I type most of my writing. But yeah, like I was a photographer until we started homeschooling about 6 years ago. And then I just couldn't keep up. It was too much work. So I stopped doing photography, but I think photography was, I love photography, but it was me. It was kind of like a mask for writing. Like it's going to come out in some creative form, but what I really want to be is a writer, but I'll just be a photographer because I don't know, it felt easier or nobody had wounded me in that way, like saying I wasn't good enough or something. But yeah, I mean, I don't do photo shoots anymore. I'll, if someone asks me to, I will, but I don't put myself out there anymore. But yeah, 5 years ago I started writing, but I wouldn't say I really started to call myself a writer until this year or even claim that I was a poet. And I was thinking about this revenge and redemption. And I think writing is me reclaiming my voice for sure. Like I was an angry teenager. So I always say like, I didn't have a voice, but I yelled a lot as a kid, but I think it was because I didn't feel heard. And so now it's like, you can't take my voice away because I'm going to write it down. And I don't care.
That's such a powerful sentiment. I think a lot of poets are born from being ignored, quite frankly. Like, and I read somewhere in, I don't know, maybe it was Instagram therapy, who knows where I read it, but I remember reading, you know, the person who feels the least heard yells the loudest. And I mean, there is, it's like the volume is not what we're actually reaching for. It's something much deeper than that. But I think that's also what you're referring to yourself as a poet, which in my own understanding of poetry means that you are fighting through all of the words to find the most distilled and the most important words to get down on the page now. So like, how is that? How has that angry teenager and discovering that voice, how did it transform into poetry? Like what kind of filtering does that require for you?
Honestly, I think I started writing poetry because it's all I had time for. Like I just, with kids and homeschooling, I was like, I don't have time for any of this other stuff. So, and I'm just going to say the thing that needs to be said. And yeah. And
there it is. There it is. Yeah, I don't have time for this bullshit. I got other shit going on.
Exactly. Really, that's how it started for me. Because I was thinking, like, why poetry? I've never studied poetry. I mean, besides what they do in school, like, I didn't go to college for it or anything. But it just started. I think it's my most honest voice, honestly, is my poet voice. Because when I write prose, it's a very different voice that I have. But I just was like, really, fuck you, teacher. I'm going to tell the truth now. And to all the things that have happened to me in my life, I'm just tired of being quiet about them. And that's really why I started writing. And I think, yeah, it really was an act of revenge. I think when I looked back on it, like, you all have quieted me for long enough and I'm done here. But I think as I've written more, there's like a redeeming of myself, you know, and even to understand that teacher, like, yeah, she said what she said and nobody should ever say that to a kid, but like, I'm not doing it for you anymore. I'm doing it for me. And I don't know, just like redeeming myself through the process of writing. Like,
that's such an incredibly powerful place to be. I mean, I think, you know, I know that Vanessa and I've talked about like writing from places of revenge or writing to be vengeful. Like we've at least lightly touched on really like how that impacts your writing or how those emotions, like we've talked about the redemptive journey and the acts of revenge, but writing from the place of revenge or writing from a place of reclamation, therefore redemption, I think is a really incredible angle that you've brought into this conversation, because I mean, yeah, I've absolutely written the big fuck yous before. And I have had to tell, I was just talking to somebody about this the other day. I had to tell all of my secrets out to the world in order to feel like I could really breathe again. Like there's just, somebody did an internet deep dive on me a couple of weeks ago. And what they came back with was I've told everybody everything. And it made me very, very intimidated because I realized like there is no taking this back. There is no coming back from admitting all of the truths and the pains that have given you some identity for a long time, right? And there's also no way to hide in the shadows of that pain anymore if it's out there in the light, you know? So this this is hard work you're doing.
Yeah, two things. Like, Jen, it really reminds me of kind of like what I used to do in relationships when I was younger. It was like, oh, hi, nice to meet you. And the same day, I'm just dumping everything on you. I'm just like, here's all my secrets, all my shit, all my drama, all the bad, embarrassing things I've ever done. Here's my this and that. Okay, like, now do you want to like hang out and like get to know me?
Because it was like me?
Right. It was almost like, I don't know if it was like a weird way to like test people or just like, I ain't got time to like slowly trickle out all this bullshit later. Like, let's just get this over with.
Read my fucking books because you will save us months of conversation about my triggers. Oh my.
Right. Exactly. Just read my books and call me back in a week and like, let's see if we're going to still go on this date.
Do both of us a favor. I'm not promoting my own work. I'm telling you, this will save you time.
No, but I love that though. And then also like, you were visited by the muse. Like, this isn't a choice for a lot of us. You know what I mean? And she appeared and you were able to hear it. And that's what's really beautiful because I think
so a lot of people aren't listening, right? And a lot of people are being visited by the muse, but like they can't hear it. And what's so important about like writing and living and being just in any type of relationship is listening, like deep listening. And I think a lot of poetry is like deep listening. Like it appeared, you heard that in your head and you're like, oh, I got to write that down. Like I still get excited about that feeling every time it happens. You know what I mean? Like that to me is just like gold.
Totally. And yeah, like I think it happens to me often and it's like something inside of me needs to say this. You know, I was finished listening to your podcast, Jen, this morning, and you guys were talking about kind of the spirit, like this intuitive knowing inside yourself and what that looks like, how that comes out. And I think that's kind of what the muse is a little bit, right? It's this knowing inside me that knows my truest self and is like, I have to say these things to be honest with myself and to know myself more. And if I keep ignoring those things, it's either going to get louder. It's going to cause me a lot more pain, whether that's mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, or it's going to go away. Like I'm going to be denied of that truest self that like, that's my, like my journey in life right now is just discovering who the truest part of me is. Like I'm tired of living under the thumb of other people, men, my own trauma, like, you know, being a mom, like I'm just tired of not being who I really am. And I think writing it's been my thing. It's been like, and that's what I love about WWKC. I'm not my kid's mom. I'm not my husband's wife at group. I'm me. And nobody knows much of those other things about me. And I mean, that's a huge part of my life, but it's like, I just get to be Heather when I show up to writing group. And I think too, you know, Jen, you were saying like all my stuff's out on the internet. It's like, that's what I love about writing group is it's not all out on the internet, but I am being honest with this kind of safe space we have to tell those really hard things that I'm just discovering as I write them, you know?
Oh, it's absolutely, I love that. It's like a group therapy for all problems, which we didn't mean. I never did I intend for that to be the case. I just wanted to be around other writers, you know, like that's the most simplistic reasoning for it existing is like, I want to be around other people who like to do this. And I don't know how to get in touch with us because we don't have a place that we gather consistently. You know, we are an introverted, reclusive people in a lot of ways, or we got a lot of anxiety, or we got a lot of freelance gigs, or we got kids. Like, there's so much that prevents us from being a community. And this, I mean, I don't know. There's so much here that I think is striking. First of all, just backing up to those words that visited you. And, you know, I love that Vanessa was like, the muse came to you, because what I heard you highlight was like, I was cleaning toilets and then this poem popped into my head, you know? And it's like, the muse never picks convenient times, but she has this way of like connecting with you in the millisecond that you are entirely quiet. And it's utterly bizarre to experience, you know, to be like seized out of nowhere. And it's, I don't know, I think poetry is the language of the busy people. You know, poetry is this place where I don't have time to spell this out for you. I leaned in so deep to the truth, to the voice whispering this truth, that I could only hear certain words, right? Like, it's almost like someone's speaking underwater, and I can only bring these few back to you to explain this situation. And it's just, it's really remarkable that you, when the muse caught up with you and it stole that moment from you, that you allowed that to change the course of your life. Like, I think that's when you get to call yourself like capital W writer, because it became important to you. You put things down to pick up a pen or type on a computer. And like, what a miracle.
And like, the work in progress seems to be like this theme, like, whether, you know, like in your bio or whatever, in your bio. But like, what are you actively doing to like shape or like reshape your life? And then like, how does writing fit into that process?
I do a lot of therapy.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, in the last 2 weeks, I've seen 3 different therapists, and I'm like, could we just have a break, please? Sometimes, like, it's like a combination of writing and therapy has opened Pandora's box for me, truly. And there's days where I'm like, shut the box. Like, I do not want any more of this stuff. But also, I can't shut the box. It's been open. Like, I have no choice anymore. I need to see myself fully, and I need to see the way I'm living fully. And it's terrifying. Like, and I mean, in this whole process is me deconstructing my faith, right? Like, I grew up in a very, well, I didn't, my parents went to church every Sunday. But then like, when I was in college, I was all in. I was like, I need Jesus, and that's going to change my world. And that's where I lived for a really long time. And it, I think like losing, I lost 2 friends in 2019 to cancer. And then like, I've lost all 4 of my grandparents in the last 4 or 5 years. So all these things are colliding, right? And it's like, grief doesn't wait for me to get my act together. It's like, I have no choice anymore. And I'm a verbal processor, and I think I mean, that's part of why I started therapy, but also like, I just can't be quiet anymore. I have to figure this out. I cannot live. I was having like panic attacks, anxiety attacks. I mean, days where I could hardly get out of bed. And I was like, I cannot live like this. I do not want to live like this anymore. And so that's, I think it was just like, I want better for myself. And I haven't lived, I've lived a lot of lives giving myself to other people. And
preach like a word, sister.
It's exhausting. And it's,
when it's such, it's incredibly powerful. Like, I want to acknowledge and honor the power of what you're saying, which is, I chose to live. You know, that's what it boils down to, is I cannot remain quiet. So much so, I saw 3 therapists last week. Like, I have all this shit that I have just been holding that is now boiling over. Like, and it's, I mean, you're spilling out in all directions, right? You're talking, you're sharing, you're podcasting, you're writing multiple days a week. Like you are, this is your big break. You know what I mean? This is your Confessing Animals podcast. This is your big break. Congratulations.
<Ta-da! laughs>
This is what it looks like when you're ready. This is incredibly important. Like this is a redemptive journey. You know, I think that's really what you've brought today is this true evidence of what the process looks like on the ground. That's where you are right now. You are sharing like, this is where I was and this is where I'm headed. And I can no longer abide these confines. And that's, yes, that's so remarkable.
Well, I want to highlight that the confines, you know, you said you've lived all these lives, but like for other people. And I think that's so important, you know, cause you touch back, like when I get to show up at writing group, I'm just Heather. I'm not someone's mom. I'm not someone's wife. I'm not whatever. And like, I just kind of realized like, oh my God, we are all like so involved in like living our lives with and for other people that we like, basically that's what therapy is. We're paying to like go have a space of our own. You know what I mean? Because it's like, there's nowhere else where like someone's voice or needs or existence isn't like weighing on us. Right. And I'm like, oh my God, that's what therapy is. Like I got to just like be alone and like someone just listen to my fucking shit. Like,
girl, that's the really important. That's the modern room of one's own. Like,
right? You know, like exactly. The therapist's office. Oh, yes. A holy shit.
Virginia Woolf knew what she was talking about. I think that's the thing. Damn. Is you got to have a little money and a room of one's own. Right?
God,
like that's the quote. But in this day and age, you got to have a little money to have room of one's own. Like that is the cycle. That's always been true. But the reality is that it's a blanket statement that is true. And it's also a fucking metaphor. Like this is, you cannot live in the, by being consumed by other people. It is not a way to live. You will eventually be entirely consumed.
And even so, people think that's like selfless, like at some point as it wrecks and wears you down, like then you're no good for those other people too. Right. So it's actually like taking care of yourself is the best thing you can do for other people. And I love your intentionality. You're like, no longer am I going to do this in order for me to live a life. I have to live a life for me.
Yeah. And what happened was I started to get really bitter and resentful. And I'm like, this is not how I want to act towards the people I love or towards myself anymore. Like, this is not helping any of us. And it's because I'm not caring for myself. I'm not being true to myself and honest with myself. And like, you guys also need to pick it up a little here. Like, you are capable and responsible. And yeah. And also, I don't have to carry your whole world on my shoulders all the time, right? Like, you need to start carrying that too. And I mean, that's been a huge theme for our family lately. Huge theme. Yeah.
It's a universal challenge, you know, I'm witnessing as there are more and more mothers in my life because I'm childless and we childless people tend to hang out together because you guys are busy raising kids. And to witness the intentionality of motherhood, wanting to shape and love these people and give them the best. And then the price and the toll that truly takes on the mother to do all of this work. I mean, and there are exceptions that there are fathers who are this active and there are fathers who stay at home. There are single fathers, but I dare suggest the majority of it is still women. And they will devour you if you let them, because there is no other way being represented. There's no other example. There is no other representation of a way to be unless the mother does the additional emotional labor and manual labor of being the example of how to have balance. And I mean, this weight that you're moving, I don't think it's Sisyphusian. I really think that it's a slow, slow process because you had to get out from under all of that weight and now you've got to get it out of the way.
And also like, wow, you don't realize like, because it's how our society is constructed, because it's just how the norms have been, you know, I know we're talking and in general, of course, every instance is different. But with the moms, like, you don't realize how much is just like automatically put on the mom without thinking, right? Like, I don't think people like intentionally like want to dump all their shit on you, but like, this is what mom represents. Like, mom is there to do everything. Like, this is like this God figure in your life who cooks, who cleans, who's there, who kisses you, who disciplines, like, you know what I mean? It's like, and it's like, still to this day, anytime I walk in my kitchen and there's like a dirty dish in my sink, I just think like, there was never once a dirty dish in my sink growing up. Not once. You know what I mean? It's because like, mom immediately cleaned it and put it away. Like, it's just these small things like that. They're like visual representations of like, you know, like, there's just so much. There's so much invisibility to the weight. And I think that is what's even more crushing, because you're just going, I'm drowning, but someone's looking at you and they don't see a big, big weight on you. And so they don't really understand why you're fucking underground.
And in the church, especially, it's like, no, you should want that. That's like, your job is
pray for your subjugation. Yes, you should want that position.
Yeah, you should be the servant to everyone else except yourself. And so then it's like a double whammy. You're carrying the societal pressure. Now you're carrying this like this pressure from your church. And I mean, my husband is, he's an awesome dad. He does so much around the house, like, but he still, you're right, he still doesn't carry the same weight that I carry. And like, even just this last week, I was like, I need set aside time to write, and I need you guys to give that to me. And I said, we need to start looking at it as a job. Yes, it doesn't pay me right now, and maybe it's never going to pay me. But like, when you start a business, you don't make a lot of money at the beginning, right? Like, it's 2 to 5 years before people are starting to be able to pay themselves. So I said, like, mom's going to work during these times. And if it's not going to work with me in the house, I'm going to find a space outside of the house to go to work. And my work is writing right now. And so, you know, we've set aside time for me during the week. And the kids are like actually really respecting it, because it's called my job now, instead of just this hobby I do on the side, or like it's taking time away from them. And it's changed all of our attitudes around, like, mom needs this. Mom deserves this. This makes mom a better person for all of us.
And right. They start seeing the benefits of it. And I hate, though, that like in our capitalist society, that we have to justify this as a job, which means,
girl, it's, I was money, just about to say it's the important. Same shit.
It's like, I fucking hate that, because like in other developed nations, the artist is supported and recognized. There is doctors, there's lawyers, there's artists, and like the government gives them money. Like, the artist is allowed to be the artist because they know that society benefits from the artist, right? And like, there is a place for everybody in the society. Like, it's only here that like you're a dreg if you're not making money. So it's like, we have to reframe it as like, this is the job I go to, which then therefore is valid, instead of like, my life is valid, and if I don't do this, then I will no longer be living. So this is where the importance comes from.
Carl, I feel like I've been doing that work for 100 years. Like, it is literally like excavating an ancient burial ground with a fucking like spork. Like, oh my God, so much work. I'm so serious. It is the most exhausting to lean into and like recollect, because here's the thing, as a person who, you know, now I facilitate workshops, there's a tangible thing to tell you kind of what I do to make some of my income. And before that, when I was just a performing artist, I say just a performing artist because I had such a great struggle for so long with requiring and expecting to be paid. Like, people would just email me to book me, and I would, you know, respond back like, what's the payment on this? Or like, my minimum booking is this rate. It took me years to be able to do that, because I had to say, the creations that you're asking me to bring to your environment took time. And in our society, time is money. Therefore, like, I had to do this whole goddamn math equation and spell it out to them as to why my work had value in a capitalist society. And I have fought tooth and nail for that recognition against myself and these and society, you know, because when we gather on Monday or Tuesday nights, I'm hanging out with all of my favorite people. Even if I just met you, if you're here, you're here for a very vulnerable reason. You know, you might just be having fun, but this might change your life. And I don't know how to charge my friends to be at my party. That doesn't feel right, you know, but I had to recognize that with the value of this experience within the culture that we live in, and that's my place. That's my job. That's what my purpose. But if I just ask people to pay me to have a purpose, they look at me like I'm a fucking lunatic. You know, like,
I mean, at this point, it's kind of like we're just like paying dues to like our membership at our society, basically. Right. You know what I mean? Because like we're all showing up there for ourselves and holding ourselves accountable, like at this like amazing thing that you created. Right. So it's like however you want to look at it, or however you need to justify what the monetary value is. It's like really it's just like all holding ourselves accountable and being where we want to be. And like you said, like even if people don't show up intending to be that vulnerable or like share any kind of truth, like I think it almost just like surprises people like what comes out. You know what I mean? It surprises you the confessions that you're making. It surprises you like what you're willing to share, like what you didn't even know you needed to share in order to like, you know, do the excavation, to do, you know, to show up to like be your fucking self. Cause like really like self-knowledge, like I wrote about this in one of the prompts recently. Like that, like what more is there? Like I need to know myself in order to live in this world, right? Like, right. And it makes us better people for the people in our lives.
It truly does. And that's what I think is so important about what Heather has, you know, said here is I agree with you, Vanessa, that the tragedy is that you have to call it a job in order for people to understand or give it some sort of label of importance, to give it some sort of value, because they do the same thing with motherhood. They treat it like, well, you made a choice and that choice has its consequences. Dumb, dumb. But also do everything.
It's like the permanent future. Intern job. You should be lucky to have this job and you're getting exposure and you shouldn't have to be paid to
look
like,
what you're doing for the future.
Blah. Right. And it's like, you don't need to be compensated for that. You're just lucky to be here. It's like that same intern mentality to get like free slave labor.
Don't worry. We'll pay that guy, that fella you're attached to twice as much as you so that he can bring it home to you and give it to you. Maybe if he thinks he should have it.
Totally. And even, you know, I've said to my husband so many times, like, you get all this praise for the work you do at work. Like, it's like this performance review and, you know, you get people emailing you and thank you so much for, you know, all these things you did. I'm like, what do I get? I get a temper tantrum. I get, you know, yelling at me, screaming at me. And like, I don't want this food you just slaved over for an hour, you know? And I'm just like, it's exhausting. Like, I'm tired of this. I love my kids and I love my family and they're not always like that, but it's like, yeah, there's very little reward, outright reward from day to day.
Right. Which makes the hard times harder, I think, because in the good times, like it's so normal to everybody else and you don't have that praise. You don't have the annual review. You don't get the raise. You don't, you know what I mean? You're not getting that outward recognition. So when it is hard, it seems so much harder because there isn't anything like, at work, like if I have a really awesome boss that I like, you know, like I don't mind doing the extra work, right? Because it's like, I like this person. I understand why. But like when I don't like the boss and I have to do extra work, I'm like it is just like drowning. You're angry. You're resentful. Like, you know what I mean? And that's where that resentment builds up because it's like, there is no recognition and like just a simple fucking recognition and thank you. And like, I realize that you are contributing to this outfit a great deal. And we all recognize that and thank you. Like as simple as that.
You know, I was just thinking about how we live in such an individualistic society, right? So how much that plays into the weight that mothers carry and that women carry in our society too, right? It didn't used to be like that. Or for a lot of cultures, it's not like that. It's a collective experience. So, I mean, that's a weight that we're carrying that I don't think we should necessarily be carrying.
Heather, you're doing the Lord's work. That's what I think.
Well, no, I just want to like, I want to recognize, because this is like, you know, you found these boundaries. You're like, in order for me to move forward, I am intentional about like reclaiming and reshaping and living a life of purpose for me. And this is what it looks like. And so now you're setting these boundaries. Like, if I have to call it work, then fine. Mom's going to work for these hours of the day. And like, I need this time. Like, you know, you're reshaping the way your kids are viewing writing. Now they're going to, maybe now they're going to be more respectful once they encounter more writers. You know what I mean? So it's like,
and parenthood, you're making space for your children to have lives that will be healthier for them because they see this example being set of like, oh, it's not about me all the time. There are other people present that need things in this world. And I am capable of managing that as a human being. Like, this is right. The way it is.
I like that everyone's kind of, they're changing along with you. So like, I hate that you have to do all this extra work to like, you have to do like these magic tricks in order for like other people to like recognize the reality of the situation, which sucks. But like we all have to do that every single day as we negotiate and navigate our bodies through this world. But yeah, like, so you're like our sixth guest, I think, on this season, you know, so you've been able to listen to some of, you know, our previous episodes about revenge and redemption. And like, we've gone on this roller coaster. And like, is there anything that's like resonated with you or like has influenced like your thinking in terms of like revenge and redemption and your writing that we've talked about on the podcast that like that really, you know, stuck with you?
Oh yeah, I got some quotes here. I wrote them down.
Oh yeah, I love you.
Okay, first of all, on Courtney's, that was the last one I listened to, was with Courtney Faye Taylor, and her last comment was, do we have enough people who are willing to step down? And I was like, what an ending. Like, you just leave it hanging there, and it's like, right?
Yeah, like you are forced to now answer that question.
Well, and it brought up for me, like, so when I took some writing courses last fall and this winter, and I, at the same time, I started taking a course through the University of Alberta called, oh my gosh, I've got it here beside me because I was like, it's called Indigenous Canada. And it's phenomenal. It's a 12-week free course. You just have to sign up with your email, but you only get like 12 weeks to finish it. All about Indigenous people on Turtle Island, really, but focusing on specific nations that are here in Canada. But one of the whole units is about Indigenous worldview, and it really got me thinking about this whole revenge and redemption thing, because they had a very different justice system than we currently have, like our Eurocentric. It's like a punishment based, you deserve this, you know, but their worldview was much more collective. It was all about collective rights, restoring the whole community if a wrong was done, and taking accountability and like confessing that you were guilty for doing something wrong. And then now you need to make it right with all the people, as opposed to, you did something wrong, we're going to lock you up with all these other people who have done things wrong. And then we're going to send you back into society, and now you have to figure out how to live, which is just going to be more violently.
Again, and there comes the isolation, which is interesting, because in Courtney's episode, we talked about the white supremacy and whiteness as isolation. And this is like a very Eurocentric way of like making sure we do not become a collective, because they know the power of collectivity. And this is how they keep us all separate and fighting amongst each other instead of, you know, fighting who we should be fighting, which is Jeff Bezos.
And Amazon, dig, they're never gonna sponsor us. Ah.
Oh my gosh, my kids were just looking up like the richest people in the world, the 12 richest people, and they were like, if all these people just donated some money, like everyone could eat, everyone could have a home. I was like, anyway, but going back to this Indigenous worldview, like it really started to shift the way I think about myself, about how we parent, about how we live in society. Like, and I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic, right? So it's like, let's isolate ourselves even further. And I mean, that's why a lot of this stuff started coming up for me, is like, you're faced with this mirror in front of you when you're living with your closest people and there's no one else. right? So you're just holding up this mirror to yourself, like, oh, here's all the shit. Here's all my shit right in front of me. I have to be, and I have to deal with it, right? But like, I need more people. I need help. I cannot do this alone anymore. And not just for my kids, but for myself. And people need me too, right?
I think what you're saying is really important. And it's kind of getting back to the collective. So when we were talking about motherhood and you know, how all the mothers are even siloed, there's a book by a woman named Sophie Lewis, and it's called Full Surrogacy Now. And I really want to read this book because it's kind of talking about like how we motherhood, mothering needs to be more of like a collective issue, right? And then in terms of indigenous cultures, there's this book called The Red Deal, Indigenous Action to Save Our Earth. And it's kind of talking about like, it's in response to like the Green New Deal. And it's just kind of talking about like indigenous ways of like saving the earth, being more about the collectivity, right? So it's like, I'm seeing more people like leaning into these ideas, right? We're all talking about this more now, about the collectivity. Like, we can no longer be siloed and individual and alone, because it's like, we can't move forward. And I think being isolated and being quarantined during the pandemic has like brought this forward for a lot of people who may have never thought of collective living before.
One of my recent writings was about one of my first memories, which was butchering chickens around a table of really strong women. And I'll read you my poem, because I started writing a book earlier this year, and I was getting close to completing it. And then I was like, I completely self-sabotaged and was like, I can't have this good thing happen for me. That's just a theme in my life. I can't have good things happen for me. So anyway, I don't know what's happening with the book, but the poem I brought was the first poem in the book I wanted to read for you guys. But yeah, one of my first memories is being surrounded by this table of really strong farm women talking. And it's not a church memory. Like, I have other church memories, but how can we get back to that community of really strong? And I mean, WWKC is that.
That image of the strong women around the farm table and butchering the chicken, like that community, right? Like, that's where the strength is. That's where you learned those lessons. You know, it's like absent church, absent God, absent, like, this is just like the heart of living right here. And when you said that, like, that just, and I don't know, it was like really powerful. Like, something like inside me jumped thinking about that vision of those women. Like, okay, I definitely want to hear your poem. And then I definitely know like this book has got to happen, because like now a whole world has been created inside of me just like based on that one very simple image.
Thank you. Yeah. When I get a little more confidence in myself, we'll come back to it.
I completely understand that.
But yeah, why don't I read it for you? The beginning. I was born the night after my mother butchered 100 chickens on the 2nd of July, into the smell of fresh cut hay, overturned soil, tractor grease, wet singed feathers, grain dust, and vodka. I was born into the home my parents built from the ground up, where they worked the land and raised 4 kids, 4 years total between. We learned to fend for ourselves. Sunday mornings were set apart for chores before church, sharp elbows in the pew, confession of our many sins, and the fear of God and my father if we squirmed. Grandma and grandpa sat in the pew in front of us, my cousins across the aisle. I was born into a long line of farmers, surrounded by cows, chickens, cats, dogs, and mice. Life and death were bitter teachers. I milked cows, drove tractors, shoveled manure, and was eager to please. I learned to check the oil, change tires, and hide behind secrets. Crying showed weakness. Only the strong survived. I was born carrying millstones, my body shouldering the weight, bearing no visible scars but beads of sweat, silent panic, the loaded tongue. I've spent years making lists on paper, filling phantom suitcases, losing my footing. I'm tired of praying. I've spent a lifetime trying to please, shrinking myself small, small, smaller. I wished I was invisible. The smallest trespass would send you into a fury, and you fired words that burned. I still bear the scars. I see your wounds now, the heat that scorched you. They still ache. I don't know how to love you. I wish we could start again at the beginning.
This is like the beginning of like a series. Like you can see it. You set the stage, you set the tone. Everything about, I could smell everything. I could feel the texture of everything. And like, we definitely need you on our compound because you have some real life skills.
Yes. And yes, I agree. There was born into the smell of fresh cut hay. What an entry. You like open this window. It's like light just like floods in when you read that line that you wrote, which is so beautiful. And the representation of it all, you know, the humanity and the beauty and this is how, you know, a life is lived. This is the way a person is built. And I think your recognition of, we're back to this theme, right? This reclamation. Mm-hmm. Of like, this is how I was raised and these are the truths I carry around. But also this is not the entirety of who I am.
And you could hear the pain in there because a lot of it was just action-based. These are the daily activities that we must do, right? And where was the love and the emotions and the thoughts and the, you know what I mean? Like, you could tell, like, I heard a lot of silence in there too. Maybe not a lot of things were talked about. I know secrets or, you know, you can't squirm or you know what I mean? Like, so you might have been strong physically because these are the daily duties that we have to do, but like not emotionally strong because, you know, you had to keep quiet.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think that's why I'm writing now. I'm tired. I'm tired of being quiet. I want to tell the truth about, and not, I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to tear anyone down. But I just can't be quiet anymore because it's too painful. And because I love you and I love myself, I want to start telling the truth, you know, and I think for me, I try to be very careful about how I tell that truth. And I know it's, my writing's really honest, but I still try to be really careful with the words I'm choosing and what I'm saying, because I'm not here to like destroy anyone. And that might have been why I started writing, but as I've written more and more, it is about redemption for me. It's about not just my, how can I redeem my life, but I want to help you too. You know, I don't want to just hurt you. I want to love.
And I think to carry on this journey of, I mean, the thing about telling these truths on the page that I think is so important is that those first drafts, those first go rounds with these feelings, the acknowledgement of them, that's all for you, you know, and what you reveal to the world about how you got where you're headed, you know, is that's when you become so much more intentional with your language. You know, you have to let it out as is. You have to say the full truth on the page. And then I think sometimes people believe that the first time they write it down is kind of like, they have this imaginary audience in their head of like New York Times bestseller where they included that essay as it was. And like, that's not the truth of writing. Like that's the capitalism pressure on writing, right? Like this is the pages where you tell that entire truth. And when you show up for yourself like that and you distill it down in an editorial way for public facing work, and that impacts people, like that's all positive. But that first laying down of that truth, the setting it down, I mean, that's all for you. And I think it's a really incredibly powerful thing to bring up.
I also think it's like, it's making revenge more of a private thing, right? Because like Jen's saying, you don't, as you said, Heather, like, you don't want to hurt anybody, but like, maybe that first draft, like, is, you're going to name names, you're going to spit in their face, you're going to get it all out, right? And revenge is a more of a private thing, right? And then the redemption is the forward facing thing that actually, you know, might be presented to the world, you know what I mean? And so, and I think that is such a powerful journey. Because revenge is usually presented as like the outward collective thing, and the redemption might supposed to be like this private, personal, like religious thing. But like, I really like the switch of the two. You know what I mean? Like having the revenge be the personal, quiet behind the doors, but the redemption being out in the world and what is presented to us.
Oh yeah, I love that, and it brings me to this quote that, Jen, you said in your podcast, the more expansive you are, the more inclusive you can be, that you have to be willing to break yourself open time and time again to keep receiving more and more light, more and more space. And then you said redemption is illumination. It's the metamorphosis. Yes. Yes. And let's do this collectively, right? And we can have the shitty first draft in WWKC because I trust the people there. And you're holding me, you're holding space for the hard things. Every week I get off and I cry because you guys listen to me. And that's all I want. That's all I want in my life is to be heard by people who care about me. And then what can I share with the world that can maybe make you think about how can I love the people in my life better, even if it hurts? Or how can I love myself better? Like, how can I be open to more and more light and more space so I can be more inclusive, right?
Thanks for listening to another episode of Confessing Animals Podcast. If you'd like to support the show and hear more from Heather, please join us over at Patreon, patreon.com/confessinganimalspodcast for the full video interviews. And please consider leaving us a 5-star review so more people can find us.